This is the Emerging Women Podcast, where we become inspired to live and lead from the truth of who we are. We're creating a new paradigm for power that includes the feminine perspective because the world needs it. Hello and welcome, Emerging Women Podcast listeners, and welcome to our Radiant Leader Series. What you are about to hear is a conversation with someone I would call a radiant leader. Now, what I mean by radiant leadership is when we source our power from within versus looking outside of us for accolades or affirmations that we're on the right path. We're also leading with connection. We know, we absolutely know that we cannot do everything alone and we cannot be fully expressed in isolation. And finally, radiant leadership is when we work and live in a way that is not depleting, but actually regenerative. And we are living and working in a way that is in resonance with our deepest desires and the truth of who we are. Now, these pillars of radiant leadership are what has allowed me to get out of reactive living and to actually successfully build Emerging Women, which is now a multi-million dollar business. I've watched this change from the inside out, and the work that we've been doing here has translated into our offering into corporate clients such as HP, Asana, believe it or not, Halliburton, Oracle, and we have been changing the lives of women and men with this material and this model of radiant leadership. So I've just opened the doors for the Radiant Leader Mastery Program for Leadership in Life, and we are taking applications now for our spring 2024 cohort. You can find the link in the show notes or anywhere on our website. Come and visit us at emergingwomen.com/the Radiant Leader to learn more about it. And we would love to have you in the program. Now let's go to this juicy conversation and dig in more into what we mean by leading with radiance. Welcome, Emerging Women listeners, to this wonderful podcast with my colleague and very good friend, Jennifer Simpson. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks, Chantal. Thanks for having me.
Yay, it's so fun. We've been working together through the Emerging Women community for, are we going to put a date on it? But it's got to be
since 2015.
Yes, we are going to put a date on it.
We are going to put a date on
almost
it.
Almost 10
eight,
years.
8, 9 years. Yeah. Yeah, at least.
Like getting on a decade here. And it's just been wonderful to together grow with you and to do the work that we do in the world to not only raise women's voices, but create a place where people can become self-expressed through the work that they do in a way that is celebrating their own humanity, where they don't have to compartmentalize themselves, where they can risk being seen, where they can risk failure. And I know that this all is at the very heart of what you do, and it's and you've been doing it actually for 30 years since you started.
A hot minute, as they say.
A very scorching hot minute. So maybe instead of me reading your bio, I just want to say, I want to tell the story a little bit of the fact that Jennifer and I, even before we're sitting here, two companies, Integrated Works, which she is the CEO of a company, a consulting company that provides leadership experiences and development for large corporations. And Emerging Women also provides leadership development experiences for large corporations. There's some slight nuances, but we both work with this connected model where people are peer coaching each other and we're integrating multiple stakeholders into our development programs. But even before that, even before I met Jen, when I was creating Emerging Women and I was on my edge. And she was just shifting her career, and she actually became an investor in Emerging Women. And I want to share that with people because it is part of this sort of connection-based model, not just for leadership, but for success, for living, for loving, for doing what you love in the world with other people. And I feel like our relationship is a living example of what you can do when you stop isolating yourself, when you reach a hand for people that are doing work that's similar, where competition, all of that doesn't matter. It's all about the connection. And through our connection, I feel like we both thrived so much and we're a role model for what could be when not just women, but people really lead with connection in all areas of their lives. So that's a little bit about me and Jennifer. And I would like to turn it over to you to give you a chance to let us know how you came to this. And I'm going to hold up the book here. How you came to this beautiful book, which were the title of this is The Koan Method, which is very interesting to me, Breakthrough Leadership for a Divided World. So give us a little bit more about you and how you landed on this.
Absolutely. Thanks. I mean, as you said, I've been doing this work in some form for 30 plus years. And so this really is a life's journey of being really curious about what the conditions are that allow people to come together across their differences and generate truly generative, creative, innovative breakthrough solutions, and why that's the case sometimes. We actually know that the best innovations come from those moments where diverse teams and different perspectives allow people to loosen their grip on what they already thought was true and discover something new, right? Like that's how innovation happens. But we also have so many experiences in our lives and in the world of places where we just can't get beyond the conflict and where difference turns into division, turns into discord. And so over many years, I've also really had a contemplative practice, right? And so the idea of a Zen koan is really about this idea of sitting in uncertainty and allowing the breakthrough to emerge, allowing the breakthrough to find us. And the power of the mantras that sometimes get used as Zen koans is really that there are these irreducible paradoxes, right? That it's a riddle or a phrase that contains contradictions within it. And the practice of reflecting on those principles is really designed to sort of break your brain, right? To loosen your grip on what you believed to be true so that something new and different can emerge, can find you. And so the notion of the Koan method is both this idea that our biggest breakthroughs are going to come from having patience with the difficulty, being willing to sort of sit in it and stay in it until we find our way to the other side. And it also serves as an acronym for understanding how I believe we can build those things. And so Koan stands for kind, open, adaptive networks, and really reflects the integration of what I call ancient wisdom traditions and modern leadership and organizational science. What we know has teams work well, what we know creates high performance, what we know creates the conditions for innovation and breakthrough that I don't know about you, but our world just so desperately needs right now.
So desperately needs it. And you started your career in organizational development. I mean, you have a PhD in that arena. And so I'm curious to see, like, in that arena, this kind of, like, this might be seen as edgy, or is that whole world evolving into something mm-hmm. that is based more into mindfulness and it's kind of, I mean, this is kind of groovy what you got here. And we're going to get into koan, what is a koan, but I'm curious to see how you're bridging that gap of more of a traditional approach and where you are now in the koan method.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, part of what I love about this work is that I feel like it's an attempt to stitch together things that, if we just look at them in isolation, don't really add up to making the difference that we want them to make. And so what I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen this in your work too, is that organizations have invested a lot in individual leadership development over the last 30, 50 years, right? And in the last 10 or 15 years, a lot of that has focused on the idea of purpose-driven leadership, authentic leadership, conscious leadership. We certainly see that there are large organizations, big global tech companies that are attending conferences like Wisdom 2.0 or Emerging Women Live when you were hosting it in person. And that the idea that we can somehow segregate our work lives from the rest of our lives just doesn't bear out in practice, right? Mm-hmm. We are embodied humans doing this work. And so what this book really is a call for is to take all of those principles that we've been teaching individuals and start building our organizations, building our systems so that the benefits of those approaches can be fully expressed. Because what I see happening now is that we train up people and then we send them back into systems where the reward systems, where the structures of appreciation, acknowledgement, recognition, reward are not lined up with what we know actually produces great leadership and produces great breakthroughs. And so now we've got a whole generation of leaders who've been taught that there's a different way. Let's go build the organizations where we can actually lead like that.
Got it. Okay. So yes. So the job's not done. Just learning a little emotional IQ, that's not really going to get us where we need to go systematically and organizationally. Okay. So tell us, what is a Cohen?
Well, I mean, as I said a little bit earlier, a Cohen is a mantra, is something that you reflect on in order to find your way to nirvana, to find your way to enlightenment. And the idea of a koan is that it has paradoxes embedded in it, right? Mm. That it's got these irreducible components that it feels like must be at odds with one another. But if you start from the premise that all of it is true, and you sit with whatever that question is, I mean, the simplest versions are things like the sound of one hand clapping, or right. If a tree falls in the forest with no one to hear it, does it make a sound? We've all heard those. Right. But the koans that speak most to my heart are slightly longer stories, right? They're narratives that invite you into a problem and have you discover that something about what you believe to be true isn't the whole truth, and sort of opens the aperture so that you can discover something that's actually new and different. Mm. And I mean, you've been working with Zen Koans for a long time mm-hmm. too. You gave one of your last keynote speeches at Emerging Women Live about it. So if there's anything you'd like to add about what it means to you, I'd be interested to hear that as well.
Yes. Well, what's interesting is I think people, when they hear these sort of paradox, or they think of opposition or two things that are opposing. And what I love about, like, what's the sound of one hand clapping, right? There's a little bit of that. Well, it's one or the other, or it's black or white. But it's like you said, it's way more nuanced than that. And it invites a question, invites contemplation. And I think just the idea of a koan gets you out of one view is over here and one view is over here. And it's like you said, like it's all true, and getting through it in a way where you invite a whole like new approach to it. And you invite surprise, and mm-hmm. You know, we just don't, it's not a question of two like trade-offs, which tends to be polarizing as well. It's more like, let's look at it holistically and see what other questions arise. What I love about your book and what I love about koans is because often they do come, not always, but often they do come in questions. And when you say, a lot of the mantras that you offer in your book are actually questions. And so I love that, leaning on that format in terms of like what else is possible. So that's my relationship to koans. I also feel like they can be infuriating. I think this is why I never became a Zen practitioner. And I was way more into like the bhakti, the bhakti path. But because it kind of hurt my brain, right? Mm-hmm. But you have a much more sort of feminine, if I can offer that approach to it. So maybe you could let us in on why it's so different in your world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that observation that the question is the powerful thing, the answer is not the powerful thing, right? The answer is only ever momentary and temporary, right? Even if we arrive at some resolution, we know it's only going to work for so long, right? That any great outcome, any great solution works for this situation at this moment and this point in time. But the questions can be enduring, right? And in fact, if we allow ourselves to be bothered by the questions at the front end, then the question itself becomes a bit of our North Star, right? It becomes the thing that we get to steer to and say, okay, is that solution we came up with still answering the question? Is it still moving us in the direction that we said we wanted to go? And I think the power of that really invites humility, right? Like invites us into a place where we recognize that we're not solving these big challenges in front of us, right? I mean, from world peace to climate change to equity of all kinds, we've got real challenges in front of us. And we're not looking for a destination. We're looking to be with one another on a journey in a different kind of way. And I think that's really what this book is an invitation to, is that sort of heart-centered, human-first path of inquiry, and recognizing that our own evolution as both individuals, but also as communities, is really tied to our ability to ask important questions of one another, to say, how do we want this to look different? What is the desired future that we're hoping to craft together? And then how do we build our way there, as opposed to focusing on what's broken or problematic or challenging about the past? It's not about ignoring those histories, but it's about recognizing that in order to create a different future, we've really got to start from what's important to us. How do we invite one another into the question of how do we be better together?
Well, how does this, like this also, I know this is, you know, primarily looking at organizations, but God, I see a lot of applicability between my husband and I. Okay. Like leading with questions and questions and questions. Okay. But can we take an example?
Sure.
Just so we can ground it a little bit, like in terms of, I don't know. I really like these questions under the success mantra. Mm-hmm. And so just so people understand, you're not getting a mantra like as a formula through, right? So,
exactly.
So it's a different way to relate to mantra. And I like that. And I like that because also we get multiple answers depending on when we ask the question. So, so for instance, the introduction to the succeed mantra, you write, building healthy, sustainable systems doesn't happen overnight. This mantra invites us to consider at any moment the future we are building, and it reminds us that success is built over time and, ding, 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 in community.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you work with this?
Hello, emerging women listeners.
Hey, if you have big dreams and you're looking to be fully expressed in a way that's both creative and influential without the burnout, if you want to live and work with more intention, grace, and connection and pave the way for others to do the same, I want to make sure that you know of our Radiant Leader Mastery Program for Leadership and Life. It's coming up in March 2024. Don't miss it. Radiant Leader is a 9-month immersive experience built to empower women in their roles as, you name it, executives, CEOs, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, creatives, and all of you that might be in between successes, and you might be at totally ground zero. We want to help you develop your leadership, extend your reach and influence, and watch your life expand in ways you never thought possible. Head over to emergingwomen.com, The Radiant Leader, for more details. We'll also have this link in the show notes of this podcast. We're taking applications now for our spring 2024 cohort. Don't go it alone, dear emerging women. Get clear now, grow, thrive with community, and step forward and help reimagine and actualize a different way to live and work. Over 1,000 women and 2,000 men and women have already experienced and are raving about this experience, and our measured results speak for themselves. Check it out on the website. Everything you need to know is there. I will say that 97% of our participants report an increased level of confidence in their leadership and their ability to move the needle on what they want to create in this world. Consider this a call from the universe. The world needs more of what you are bringing. Yes, we do. But let's work together to bring it in a way that feels nourishing, sustainable, and good. That's emergingwomen.com/the Radiant Leader. See you there, sisters.
Yeah, so the succeed mantra really is tied to our commitment to building more just systems. And we often use this mantra when we're working with organizations that are thinking about their futures in some way. And so it really grew out of work that we were doing in succession planning. And so the succeed mantra tied in some ways to helping people think about, particularly in organizations where you have legacy leaders that have been in role for 20 years, 30 years, and therefore, as individual humans, often reflect the past in some way, right? They were born of a different time in response to different moments. And many of those leaders now are thinking about what is the future that they want to create? What is the new generation that they want to leave behind? And so Succeed stands for strategies for understanding, cultivating, and championing excellence and equity and diversity. And then there are key questions that you can ask yourself relative to each of those elements of the mantra. And so we really engage teams in thinking about what are the strategies that they are currently using? Are those producing the futures that they want to create? Are they producing the results that will create the future that they're dreaming of? Understanding how do you really invite people into inquiry and recognize that the evidence they have that they're not getting exactly the results they want probably means there's something they're missing in the equation. Mm-hmm. What do they need to understand differently? And so again, for each of the letters in the mantra, there would be a key powerful question that we're working with leaders and organizations to unpack and explore. Mm-hmm. And you said a few minutes ago, this isn't about tips and tricks, right? This isn't about a checklist of things you do and then it's all sorted, because that doesn't work, right? I mean, we all know that there's no checklist that's going to, you know, if that thing existed, we'd be living in a different world already. But again, these are really questions for leaders, and leaders can come from anywhere, right? You might be leading your PTA at your school, or on your HOA board, or leading your kids' sports team, or, you know, there's so many different ways in which leadership can be exercised. The mantras are designed to be these helpful memory devices to say, what are the questions I should be bothering myself with? What can I bring into a conversation that's going to create those little moments of spark and disruption that are going to lead us to a different outcome rather than just reproducing the same one?
Right. And I love what you said, disruption. And, you know, that was such a hot term with the, you know, we're disrupting the market. And, but when you're talking about division, is that, I mean, aren't we working to get everybody on the same page? Like, what's the value of more disruption?
So thank, that's such a perfect question. And the way that I really think about this is the distinction that I draw in the book is between finding common ground and building a common good. And I think we've spent a lot of time in the effort to get beyond division, seeking common ground, which from my perspective too often results in kind of least common denominator solutions.
Right.
We sort of boil everything down to the point where nobody can really disagree, but nobody's excited about the outcome. And the possibility of true transformational change is also really diluted. But if we start from the premise that what we're doing is trying to build a common good, then I actually think that creating opportunities for disruption to occur in containers of care, right, inside communities where we really want to find a way forward that's good for everyone is what allows us to have all the voices around the table heard, is what allows us to loosen our grip on our own felt sense of what the right outcome is, so that we can hear each other and so that we can find our way to solutions that work for broader communities and have broader impact.
And what kind of division are you seeing out there? I mean, real, I don't know. I feel like in a lot of the companies we're seeing, it seems to be like we're leaving anything personal at the door. Like it's not actually making it into the organizations. I'm just curious to see, like, in your world, what are some of the hot divisive topics that are coming in and that are alive?
Yeah. Well, we have slightly different client bases. Sure. You work more in sort of global tech, and we work a lot with community-based organizations who are really doing some direct service around these issues. But we're also working with, we've got a global software company that we're designing a JEDI program for a global rollout that's happening early in the new year. And these are exactly the questions that they're wanting to roll out to their global team, because they recognize that to be effective, to be competitive, when you've got a team that has members based in 15 or 20 different countries around the world and has lots of different first languages and has different cultural traditions, just checking all of that at the door doesn't work. I mean, we can choose not to talk about it, but we are it. Right? Mm-hmm. We think in those languages. We were born in those cultures. We have traditions. We have value systems. And if we think that we can bracket and segment that, we're inherently favoring someone's value systems and someone's models. We're just not naming it, right? We're just not talking overtly about it. And so the places where I think this work is most powerful is where we're willing to say, yeah, we're further apart than we thought we were. Let's give voice to that. And then let's talk about what it takes to create something that's actually new, that's really co-created together. And so You asked what kinds of divisions we're seeing. We've got a couple of organizations that were doing really large scale assessments on JEDI kinds of issues or looking at large scale organizational culture. And the fear of getting it wrong and saying the wrong thing looms so large for so many people, right? That it becomes an inhibitor to naming what we need or speaking what we're afraid of in the moment, because we're worried about offending someone. We're worried that we're going to use the wrong word or say the wrong thing. But that means we're not building the muscle of having the hard conversation or trying anyways, and then being willing to say, yeah, that didn't go as well as I hoped it would. Let me clean that up and try again, right? Mm-hmm. That we're not creating the relational foundation where disruption can happen and actually be healing, right? Mm-hmm. To move us from recognizing that, oh, there's harm over here that I didn't recognize. How can we be together in creating something that feels different going forward?
Yes, yes. Yeah, and just always, you know, I always think about, like, I want to stop having the conversation. Like, in other words, like, it just becomes second nature for us to speak up, to integrate our personal lives, to, you know, bring the truth of who we are into all areas. Because like you said, that's what increases innovation, is when we're not compartmentalizing that and we're bringing it forward. And you know what? It's just so much more interesting, especially when you're cross-cultural, to hear, like, for us, it's women, you know, when we're, especially when we're working with women in Asia. I mean, some of these women are getting up at 4:30 in the morning and cooking breakfast and loading up all their kids and their spouse, their husbands, most likely, with breakfast. You know, they're out the door and they're like sitting in front of their computer and starting their full day. And then, you know, doing lunch and doing, you know, and like, if they don't, like, make, and they're engineers, and so they're like maybe the only woman on a team of 200. Sure. If there's no,
that doesn't only happen in Asia, by the way, right?
I know, believe me, it's not, you know, but what I'm saying is, like, those conversations, it's not like you have to spend all this time talking about it, but being real about, like, our cultural or gender-based or ethnic-based reality is just an invitation for other people, you know, to have compassion, to have empathy, and it will also help to shape a more humane work environment. Because like you said, we default to the norm, which is don't share and work, you know, if companies can get away with it. I mean, bless their hearts. No one's really evil, but, you know, we'll take as many hours as we can get.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And everybody wants to do a good job. Right. So if the default in the company is 60, 70 hours a week, and you want to do a good job, that's where you're going to be at. And, you know, self-selecting into that culture is going to feel normal, quote unquote, unless people start speaking up.
Yeah. And Chantal, I think the piece that's important to underscore about that, and I mean, and truly this has been a learning in my own leadership. I mean, I've been studying this stuff for a long time, as we've well established. But in the last 5 or 6 years, I've really been working to build the organization that lives this way day in and day out. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of places where I went in a little naive, right? Assuming that something would just be easier than it was, or that I wouldn't have to attend as intentionally or with as much care to creating the container in which this way of being is possible. And that's really what I mean about the shift from individuals who read about, think about, go to courses about this stuff, to building systems where we can really live into the full flourishing. I mean, and it's still absolutely every single day a work in progress, but for us sitting here as white women in a wealthy country, to presume that just saying, like, oh, everyone should bring more of their full selves to work, like, there are lots of people who have been socialized that that is deeply unsafe, mm-hmm. right? And have had yeah. lived experiences in their own lifetimes that that is deeply unsafe. And so I think it's important to both acknowledge and name that that's true. And I'm writing this book really was about a call to people who have power and influence and are in leadership positions to take a different level of responsibility for creating these containers that have characteristics of psychological safety, that create conditions for mm-hmm. healing, right? Both at the individual and at the system level, so that we can reap the full benefits, right? Yes. But if the only people who feel free and comfortable to bring their full selves to work are people who've already been told that their voices are valued and celebrated, it doesn't actually change the dynamic, right? Like that, those are the disruptions that are necessary, right? We've got to call into question why the things we've always done or have been doing for a while are producing the results that they are, and then be willing to ask ourselves what we would need to do differently to get different results.
Right. And then we're back to the questions again, because what I love about this is that not only are we asking questions of the group, but we're inviting people, especially those people who don't speak up very much, to bring their own questions. And it's a little bit easier to invite your team, and especially those who don't speak up, to say, what questions do you have, than it is to say, especially if someone is not used to voicing their opinion, what's your opinion on this, right? And I mean, that's a subtle but very powerful difference.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It kind of takes people off the hook. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, even like individual contributors that, hey, I'm just here to, you know, give my part on the software product, you know, or whatever. And to be invited to say, what's a question we should be asking that we're not asking, mm-hmm. is a powerful way to get somebody to be part of a conversation without like feeling like they're sticking their neck out. And right. So I love the approach of the koan, and I love the questions. And I don't know if you have like, what is like your top three most powerful questions that invite breakthrough when you have a team that is divided?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. That it, in and of itself, is a great question. And I don't know that there's a single answer that works peanut butter across all organizations.
Sure.
But I think I would just invite people to start from the inside out, right? And the book is really written in that way, that yes. part of this is about really looking at what am I, or what are we as an organization attached to? How might it be getting in our way, right? So starting
at question number one is, where are we attached? Now, some of that might be good because it's like our value of free thinking or whatever, you know, right? So is, and some of it might be bad. We're attached to high performance and we don't want to get, right? So
we're attached to a particular model of leadership, right? That leaders look a certain way or talk a certain way or demonstrate these types of behaviors over those types of behaviors. But, you know, one of the mantras in the book that we use for visioning strategic planning work all the time is called VIABLE. And it stands for vision, right? What is your vision of the future? Where do you aspire to go? What are your ideals? So what is important to you about how you show up on the way there? And we really get people to sit in those two questions before they start working out the how, which in this model is approach. And so I think for anyone, I love, you know, Otto Scharmer's work and other folks who've really thought about crafting the field of the future. And I deeply believe that if we're going to create transformation, it starts by asking ourselves, what is the future we want to build? And then asking ourselves, and who do we want to be on the way there? And okay, so then what would we need to be doing today in order for that future to become possible? And from there, there's lots of things you can ask yourself about what's in the way or how you might evolve your way.
That's really great. That's no matter, this is kind of what I was looking for. Like no matter what the situation, no matter where the division is, you start with what do we want to accomplish? What does it look like when we all have our dream X?
Yes.
And then you build that together. I mean, and then I love the other question is, who do we want to be on the way there? That is super powerful. And that could be different for everybody.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
But they're all putting that into the pot.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it really becomes super powerful when we stop feeling like our job is solving the past or fixing what's broken. When we start focusing on who do we want to be tomorrow or 10 years from now, we shift our energy in the direction of our hopes and dreams instead of on our despair, right? Like the things that we're so sad and frustrated are not yet better than they are. I think even from an emotional, energetic place, getting people into hope and aspiration and commitment for what they care about creates a radically different trajectory than grappling with the messy things that are the bane of our days, right?
Yes. Yeah, I love that. And also, once you've identified, oh, I want to be like this, you just start being like that. It just happens. And I love, again, like allowing individuals, even though we are in a team and we're co-creating, to take power and agency over their piece of that. Like, who do I want to be when we're creating that vision?
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So, that's really what starts to turn it.
Yeah,
love it.
Truly.
Okay, well, what am I missing here? What question am I not asking about the Koan method and this whole huge, big idea that you have that we actually can heal divisive cultures, right? By asking a lot of questions and contemplating not trade-offs or opposition, but a truly more nuanced paradox of the problem, which is more and more prevalent in our highly complex organizations and interdependent society.
Yeah.
What else do I need to ask to bring out the work? I feel like we've covered it, but I just love it so much, this idea. So,
well, I'll just bring it back to what you opened with. I think the question is, who will be your people? Who do you want to do this work with? How will you engage a community in moving this work forward? I mean, you and I have written about the power of we, right? And that theme really runs throughout this book. But one of the things that I have come to believe so strongly is that when you're creating really transformational change, right? When you're moving from a known current state into an unknown future state, there is no map, right? We are the trailblazers. We are the ones who are discovering the way. It becomes really important to have fellow travelers on that journey, right? It can feel really lonely and really frustrating if we're trying to do all that work alone. And truly, we won't build a different future if we're only building it from what we already know, right? Building a different kind of future requires that we both engage different people in the process and that we go about it in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, that is, well, first of all, it's more fun, right? Okay.
Sometimes it's still hard though. I mean, I don't want to paint this as a sunshine and rainbows experience, right? I mean, deciding that you want to take this work on does mean that you're willing to be a little bit uncomfortable along the way, right? And it is more fun to be uncomfortable in community than it is to be uncomfortable in isolation.
I know, holding up with my own problems and trying to like get through, like, you know, and I'm doing the wrong thing to get through it. And, you know, no one's telling me and I'm not getting reflections and I'm not growing, you know, isolation is, I'm just over it. And believe me, I'm somebody who's tried to pretty much do everything by herself. So yeah. And, you know, like being in the, one of the reasons I think I left the Buddhist path was because I couldn't deal with Sangha. Right. Mm-hmm. So I know we're talking about teams and organizations and communities, but hell, I mean, like that idea of Sangha, like you really are, the best way to be in a team is to be really in it with them and to have some level of intimacy and personal connection, right? And it requires vulnerability and being seen by multiple people, right? And it's hard to hide. And yeah, it's uncomfortable, but I don't know. I feel like it's way less uncomfortable than it is to try and grow as a human being in our work and in our love by ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's a recipe for burnout. At least that's how it was for me.
And it just doesn't work. I mean,
and then you don't have the fulfillment. You don't have the meaning. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So we're going to do this work in a way that works. And that is self-expressing, not just individually, but in our teams and our organizations and the businesses that we create.
Yeah.
And let's keep asking those.
Yeah, I think if we can have the courage to say, not on my watch, right? It's not going to stay this way on my watch. And I'm mm-hmm. going to go find the other people who have that shared belief that a better world is possible. Together, we can accomplish so much. And so this mm-hmm. book is really an invitation to discover the questions that get you, wherever you are, out of a stuck place and into motion so that you can imagine something different together than any one of you can imagine alone.
Mm-hmm. Love it. And again, not just for organizations, for people all, you know, I mean, even I know a big part of our audience, we're entrepreneurs, we're solopreneurs. There's a lot of different varieties of leadership in the emerging women community. And the more that we reach for connection mm-hmm. and continue these questions, even when we don't have an official organization or mm-hmm. a large team, we help to create a new model, even for entrepreneurs. So thank you so much, Jen.
My it's pleasure. Thank you, Chantal. Absolutely.
I love being on in this conversation and on this journey with you.
Send the Zoom hearts.
Oh, how did you do that?
I got a fancy new computer. It's something to do with the chip in the Mac. So, but it's pretty cool.
Okay. We all need that. I don't know if I can put that in the show notes, but it was very cool. All right. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thanks, Chantal. Bye.